This is Sound Effect. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and our theme today is My Other Family. For a lot of LGBTQ people, it's still the case that coming out means giving up connections to family. And so chosen family becomes hugely important. Matthias Roberts is a mental health counselor in Seattle, and he hosts a podcast called Queerology. It's focused on queer people of faith. Matthias grew up in a conservative evangelical setting where homosexuality was considered a sin.
We moved to Iowa when I was 10, and that's when I kind of started realizing that I was gay. I always knew there was something different about me, but that was when, you know, puberty was starting, and realized, wait a second, like, I'm attracted to men in the same way that these guys in my Boy Scout group seem to be attracted to women, and what's going on.
How did you think about the eventual prospect of telling your parents?
I kind of vowed that I would never tell my parents. Didn't think that they would ever find out. I didn't plan to ever talk about it to anyone. It was going to be kind of like my little secret. Because I thought, I mean, and I believed that I could change my sexual orientation, that this would be just a phase, or that, you know, something was wrong with me. And if I prayed enough, or, like, you know, made enough promises to God that if I were to go be a missionary or whatever, then my sexual orientation would change and I'd get married to a woman and no one would be any wiser. But that's not what happened.
When did you first broach it with your parents?
So when I was 15, I was working at a small public library in the town that we lived in, and there was this fitness section that I would, when I'd be shelving books, I would sit in that section and, like, flip through, and it was, like, the only place that I could find, like, shirtless pictures of men in this section in the library. And I brought one of the books home with me. And had hid it under my bed. And my mom, when she was cleaning my room one day, found it. And I think things clicked for her. She called me downstairs and asked me, she's like, do you have this book because you're interested in getting fit? Or is it because you like the pictures? And I answered her honestly. I had it because of the pictures. Like, it was a 80s homoerotic guys for fitness book. Like, it wasn't it's full page spreads of men wearing next to nothing. Like, it was pretty obvious why I had the book. And I saw my mom's face just fall, but she also gave me a huge hug and said, we'll work through this together. Like, I don't know what to do, but we'll work through this together. I mean, they didn't know what they were working with. Like, they were just as lost as I was. But at the time, I felt cared for.
So how did that evolve over the next bunch of years?
We never talked about it much. Like, it was always this kind of hushed thing in secret, like, kept away from my sisters. My dad and I would meet at, like, 6:30 in the morning at a coffee shop to talk about my attractions and read scriptures together. And that kind of shroud of secrecy remained up until I started coming out to my sisters, which was, I mean, it was in my early 20s when that happened. And I had thought my parents would evolve along with me. I kind of kept them in the loop, being like, here's what I'm learning. Here are what other people are saying. Did you know there are other people out there who believe they can be gay and Christian? Like, I kept them in the loop on that until I started realizing pretty quickly I was hitting a line. And then past that line, and my parents started telling me, you're starting to believe lies. Like, this isn't true. You're being deceived. And that distance started developing between me and my parents. But what started happening, it meant that I wasn't as forthcoming with my parents about my life. Things that I wanted to share with them, but didn't feel like I could because their/our belief system prevented that. Like, I've had to grieve a loss of my parents because they aren't involved in my life. They don't really know me.
So where are you at the moment in terms of your relationship with your folks?
It's still evolving, and it's tense. my parents have been very explicit within the last year about what they will and won't accept in my life. And I am still currently trying to figure out what to do with that.
What are those lines that they've drawn?
I mean, they've told me that if I ever get into, I'm currently single right now. My parents have said if I ever get into a relationship, a serious relationship, then I can no longer be a part of the family.
What was that like to hear?
It was devastating. There were words that I never thought I would hear from my dad's mouth.
Because it had been a while at this point, more than 10 years.
Yeah, I'd been out to them for 11 years.
And have you thought about how you might handle it if that happens? I mean, if you find yourself in a relationship?
Yeah, I have. I mean, it's a relationship is something that I deeply want and am actively pursuing. My hope is that my parents will shift. Like, if that happens, when I get into a relationship, like, and it's serious enough that I'm ready for this person to meet my parents, I would hope that that line will stare them in the face and they'll be able to see what they're losing.
As you have gotten to know other LGBTQ folks, mm-hmm. what have you learned about how unique or how common your experience with your family is?
Yeah, it's incredibly common. And in fact, my experience has been pretty easy compared to most people, or maybe not most, to a lot of people. A lot of people have had their families just completely disown them, especially people in faith communities. And so queer people have to find other ways to get that emotional fulfillment that families are supposed to be bringing.
How did that work for you? How did you start to, I don't know, fill in some of those spaces that were left by that broken relationship?
In Arkansas, I actually started going to this little tiny yoga studio that was run by the wife to one of the Episcopalian priests in town. And they, Lori and Stan, pretty quickly became parental figures in my life. I started going over to their house for dinner. I started going to their church and found another way of doing life where I didn't have to hide any of myself from them. I don't think I had ever had adult figures in my life that I wasn't afraid of how they would respond if they found out that I was gay, because that was my entire world growing up. Love was almost conditional, and they showed me an unconditional love that profoundly transformed me.
So you said that your experience is not uncommon among gay and lesbian people. Have you found that these surrogate families, these, I don't know if that's a fair way to say it, but, you know, these chosen families and chosen parent figures are a big part of the culture of, like, gay life?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, chosen family is not an uncommon term in the queer community. It's a given, pretty much, that we all have our families of people that we know have our back, and we need them in order to survive.
Matthias Roberts is a licensed mental health counseling associate and host of the podcast Queerology. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, this is Sound Effect, and today we're telling stories about my other family. For nearly 20 years, Gulshan Yunus ran a daycare in her Mount Lake Terrace home. As you might expect, she made a lot of chicken nuggets, built quite a few blanket forts, and played endless hours of kid shows and the occasional Pakistani soap opera. But Gulshan was always more than a daycare worker to the kids in her house, and the kids were more than just charges to her.
They're like children to me, you know.
Yeah, that's why we call you mommy.
Yeah, they all call me, mommy mean mother.
Yeah.
That's Marisa Como Karaji. She was one of the kids Gulshan took care of. She's all grown up now, and she still spends time with Ami. The location, though, is a little different. Marisa took us there.
When I was growing up, both my parents worked full-time, so they needed someone to take care of me during the day. So like most parents, they tried really hard to find the right person. But in the end, and this is kind of a family joke now, I picked Gulshan.
No, my mom and dad always said I picked you.
So the day they met up with her, I kept crying and crying.
And no one could calm me down, and then...
And Gulshan just looked over and said, give her to me. And the second I landed in her arms, I was silent.
And they're like, yep, that's how she picked you. She picked it.
The same thing happened with Elizabeth, you know?
Yeah?
Yeah, her mom said, when you pick her up, I said, this is the one I want.
So Gulshan took care of me almost every weekday, starting from when I was baby to about 4. She also took care of my good friend Elizabeth and at least a dozen other kids. She also had her own family, too. I remember her house being constantly filled with people coming in and out to eat, grab their stuff, or just to come in and say hi.
And I did for 18 years. And then those kids grown up, so... then I stopped.
The daycare kids grew up, her own 3 kids grew up, and 10 years ago, her husband, Papa Yunus, passed away. After so many years with a full house, suddenly Gulshan was alone, and she needed something else to do. So she started taking walks. She tried walking around her neighborhood, but she didn't always feel that safe, and it's no fun in the rain. So her oldest son bought her a gym membership, but all she did there was walk.
So then I said, why I have to waste my money on the walk? I can be a walk free here, you know?
And then she found the mall. A safe, warm place where she could walk in peace.
Hello.
Without paying a membership fee.
How are you?
Good, good, thank you.
I've been away from Seattle for a while, and I recently moved back. And so I called Gulshan to hang out, and she said, well, come to the mall with me. Okay. So the first time I went with her was a little awkward. She started introducing me to people she knew by saying, oh, this is my daughter Marisa. She's not married. But things got a little more comfortable after that. So now when I go with her, we have a routine.
I do after 2:30 because, you know, our prayer is 2:30. I pray that and then I come, usually.
We walk into the mall through the same door. We walk in the same direction. And we make the same number of loops.
From JCPenney to JCPenney 1. So I do 5. 3, 2 this side and 2, 3 in food court. So I do that.
She never buys anything.
Because I don't wear those clothes or anything, you know, just I'm a... want some perfume that my kids give me on my birthday, so I don't need anything.
She does stop to say hello to all the people that work at the kiosks. Derek from the calendar stand has seen Gulshan a lot.
She's a really nice mall lady. I call her a mall lady, but she walks the mall every day. And she always stops by to give me a nice candy or gum.
Then there's Zanet from Kazakhstan who sells splat balls.
Splat balls, squishies, small kiosks.
I love and hate these things at the same time. They're like super addicting little water-filled fidgets that you can squeeze and throw. Gulshan says hi to Zanet a lot.
She always, every day, walking around and giving to everybody candies. That's how I know, like, real Santa Claus.
And then there are the cell phone guys. She gives everyone else hard candy from her purse. But for these guys, she gives them a box of homemade sweets.
Damn.
The guys are from Pakistan and India, and they have a special bond with Gulshan. I call Gulshan Ami, or mother, but they have a special name for her too.
She's Auntie Gulshan. She's a sweetheart to everyone.
Cell phone guys are always Gulshan's first stop when she gets to the mall.
I feel so happy with her because I can discuss a lot of things with her, especially the girls talk.
They hold her coat for her at their stand while she walks, so she can walk hands-free.
So, she's a sweetheart.
Her last lap always lands her back to their stand so she can pick up her coat. And then she walks through JCPenney and back out to her car. Then we drive to her house. We always end our time together by drinking chai in her living room. It still smells the same. A few things have changed here and there, and it's emptier now, but it's still the same house I grew up in. When I was a kid, it was normal for us to see Gulshan surrounded by people in this house. It was just the way things were. But now when I see her holding her chai and talking to me, it's kind of like being friends with your parents. I'm not seeing her as a mom or some authority figure. I see her as Gulshan, the social person who can go to the mall and make friends with total strangers. It explains how all these people ended up at her house in the first place. She's just that person everybody wants as a friend, or an ami, or an auntie. And I think she really enjoys being the kind of person that can be friends with a guy reading a book at a calendar stand, or some kids trying to get their green cards working at a cell phone kiosk. And I know she really enjoys that her daycare kids love her enough to keep coming back.
It's really good, you know, that mostly people don't remember. They just forget everything. But those kids still remember me, it is a big thing for me.
I'm Marisa Komokereji, and my ami, Gulshan, is my other family.